Life Show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, and I host the show each week. In addition, I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that advocates for a much broader approach to cancer care, one that attempts to address people's many physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs when faced with a diagnosis. The name of this style of cancer care is integrative medicine, or integrative oncology, to be specific to cancer. My guests on the show are all people with experience and expertise in this arena, and today is no exception. I'm welcoming Kathy Adams back to the show. Kathy has a background in nursing and leads the Yes to Life EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, online workshops. Hi Kathy, welcome back to the Yes to Life show.
It's been a while, Robin, thank you.
It has been a while, getting on for 3 years since you were last on the show with your colleague Aga Kahinda. And the focus of that show was EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique, thought of by a lot of people as simply tapping, since that's what it consists of. Today's show is going to be in the same territory, but with the passage of time, both the scientific understanding and your own perceptions have evolved quite a bit, I believe. So I'm hoping that we're going to be exploring contextual matters such as ritual and ceremony along the way. EFT, it's an astoundingly simple practice that can be done to you by a practitioner, but more commonly you do it to yourself. It's a relatively recent idea that seems to have taken hold in a very remarkable way. So I'm just, maybe you tell us how you first became aware of it and what it was about it that interested you.
Okay, so I've been practicing EFT since about 20 years now. 2005, I first came across it, and I was training to be a homeopath at the time.
Right.
I have a nursing background, but I brought my children up with kind of complementary medicine, particularly homeopathy. So when I finished my nursing, I went and trained as a homeopath, and my clinical tutor was a trainer in EFT.
There you go.
So I went straight from homeopathy, which is quite hard work, actually, homeopathy. You really have to spend a lot of time trying to work out the remedy, especially in the early years.
Yes.
But EFT, as you say, is simple, but it's actually also profound. And although it's simple in some ways, it's really complex in other ways, especially if you're a practitioner and you have really honed your skills relationally. There's an artistry to EFT the more you become established in practice.
Right. Okay. More depth than it appears. Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll find out a bit more about that. So what is your understanding of the way that the idea first came out? I mean, why would anybody think that by simply tapping areas of your body could have some impact on your psychological and nervous state?
Well, Roger Callahan, way back when, who was a psychotherapist, was working with somebody who had a water phobia. And he was interested in Chinese medicine. And he'd been working for a good while with this woman with a water phobia, and, you know, who was really, really petrified around bodies of water, taking swimming pools, lakes, the sea. She had this very life-affecting phobia. But he was interested, as I said, in Chinese medicine. And he knew that the anxiety that she felt was in her stomach. He had located the anxiety in her body, mm-hmm. and the stomach meridian is here underneath the eye. So he got her to focus on her phobia while tapping underneath the eye. And lo and behold, that was the birth of tapping, because the phobia just disappeared.
Amazing. All right. So, he's using the background of Chinese medicine to do an experiment, basically.
Yeah. To bring psychology and Chinese medicine together.
Hmm. And the reason it was bringing the two together was because it'd been able to locate the anxiety in that particular organ.
Yes, in a particular area of the body.
Yeah. How interesting, yeah. All right, so like quite a lot of the recent science that's emerging in the field of PNI, psychoneuroimmunology, which is where EFT sits, mind-body medicine, things are beginning to get a little bit esoteric, really. It seems to me science is finding itself in arenas that would have been thought of in the past as the preserve of spirituality, and not things science would ever be able to get a handle on. But it's really quite surprising to find this kind of convergence, science and spirituality, that's occurring. So I wonder if you can tell us what the latest scientific findings regarding the mechanisms and the effect of EFT are.
Yeah, I can dive into that. Because it's really encouraging that there is a real growing, robust evidence base for EFT.
Yes.
We've got a very good number of randomized controlled trials and meta-analysis that show really strong outcomes for anxiety, depression, PTSD, where people quite move beyond kind of clinical thresholds of their conditions in relatively few sessions.
So just to be clear, what you mean by clinical thresholds is they're on the edge of being needing kind of drugs or something. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you know, if you kind of do a PTSD questionnaire, yes, you move out of the PTSD.
Your rating would go down significantly
enough,
not anymore considered in the region of having PTSD. I understand, right.
Or if you kind of, even in a single session, if somebody came with an anxiety and it was kind of a 9 out of 10, by the end of a session, it would be, you know, 1, 0,
right,
or very low. So even in a session, there can be very significant shifts in somebody's experience of what they bring.
Right. Okay. Sorry. And I was interrupting you. You were telling me about some of the latest science.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that we've been really kind of blessed with recently is that some of the leaders in our research field have written some papers explaining how the methodology of EFT for those science skeptics.
Right.
So what we are aware of is that there are quite a few different aspects that come together and integrate that allow EFT to be understood, that contribute to its working. For example, it brings in exposure therapy. So if you think about that woman with a phobia, or if you think about somebody who's got a traumatic memory, we work with somebody within their window of tolerance, just taking them to the edge of it and then tapping that intensity down so that there is a titrated exposure to the experience that they're bringing. So it's a really safe therapy. Then we bring in mindfulness and self-compassion, and we put the issue outside of the sense of the person as an individual. So this is happening to you, or this is an experience that you're having, but it's not actually you in your entirety. So there's a separating the issue, the part that has the issue, from the true self. We do a lot of testing. So we actually kind of test what is going on for somebody at the beginning of a session and keep testing throughout the session, so that somebody has a sense of structure and expectation and can track their session and see that there are improvements happening. It calms the body. It affects the nervous system. It down-regulates what's going on, whether it's the levels of cortisol, the stress hormone, or what's going on in the brain. You know, brain studies, fMRI studies show that there is downregulation of areas in the brain that are alight, shall we say, when there is stress and or pain, even, because EFT affects pain, and that then get turned off as the session unfolds. So, yeah, there's a few different ways that it's working.
Yeah, so this the kind of things that are, you say, have been scientifically tested to address the skeptics are things like measuring cortisol levels or brain activity. Is that right? Those are the kind of areas they're studying.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about you and your experience of using it. So, yeah, we talked 3 years ago, and I'm sure your thinking is progressing all the time about what's going on, what works, what doesn't work. You know, when you use a practice like that, it's an ongoing experiment in a way, your own clinical learning. So I just wondering what you're thinking now, what things have changed in your experience in recent years, and what you think the potential is of this kind of mind-body medicine.
Well, I see EFT as having a very broad spectrum of how it works. At one end of the spectrum, we can call EFT tapping, because it is that simple modality that I can teach somebody in a well-being session for Yes to Life, that they can then go and take away to use themselves if they're waiting for a scan or waiting for a doctor's appointment, or they're really triggered into their anxiety. And that is the simple tapping end of EFT. But at the other end, when I'm working one-on-one with people, we clear trauma. It's called memory reconsolidation, a memory that would make somebody very dysregulated and distressed gets filed away in a different part of the brain, so that it no longer creates the same kind of reaction when it's thought about. So there's a cognitive and emotional restructuring when it's done as clinical EFT. So I just wanted to kind of give that that separating simple tapping from clinical EFT.
Right. Okay, I hadn't understood that. So that's very interesting, because, I mean, both things obviously are of great value. The simple tapping, as you put it, of course, the great thing about it is free. You can do it yourself, and you can do it anywhere you like, anytime. So that's a great bonus when it comes to things to deal with, say, stress, which is very common in people with cancer. But at the other end, you're saying this actually can tackle some pretty deep-seated stuff.
Yeah, and even getting to ancestral memories.
Right.
If we're working with people for a period of time and we're building that really kind of container of a relationship, when somebody wants to work in a deep way, then profound experiences can arise in a session that can be quite surprising. It's almost as if EFT opens a relational field. It almost is as if it opens a veil between kind of the conscious left brain and something that is the deeper and greater, almost like the web of life.
Right.
Somehow the tapping, in ways that, you know, we can't explain in a scientific methodology yet, accesses the unconscious, opens the unconscious, so that we can, you know, memories can pop up in a very surprising way. Perceptions can shift in ways that seem quite extraordinary.
So what you referred to as ancestral issues, you know, some people might not have a clue what you mean by that, but this is the concept that, say something absolutely drastic happened to you, your parents or whatever, that in some way emotionally and psychologically that would be passed on to you, even if you didn't even know about it. Would that be right?
Yes, and in science we call it epigenetics.
Okay, fair enough, yes.
And, you know, we know that, you know, to something very traumatic that happened two generations ago can still be around as anxiety in a grandchild.
Well, it makes complete
sense.
And
there's really no real cause for that anxiety in that person's lifetime.
Yeah. Well, it does make complete sense. If you take a sort of simple example of, like, you know, somebody experienced a terrible fire, for example, and lost a member of their family and all this kind of stuff, well, they would, you know, fairly naturally be a bit paranoid about fire for the rest of their life, and their children would be around that paranoia. And even though they might not know what had happened, they might not have even been alive, then it could very easily, I can see how you could pick it up.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy.
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Maybe we can go in and have a look at EFT in one of the areas in which is particularly useful, I understand, which is in pain management. I'd be interested to hear any developments in that area, in your experience. And maybe you could illustrate it with some example of a way that it's helped one of your clients.
Yeah, sure. So the studies that have been done around pain in the last 5 years have shown that the pain areas in the brain get changed through EFT, the EFT procedure, and people can really be relieved of pain symptoms through the tapping process. And one of the really interesting things that's been found is that people can get the same level of relief by doing an online program as with scripts as in an in-person therapy session. So there's also a real economic kind of benefit here of doing EFT for pain in groups.
I can see that. Do you just want to explain exactly what the scenario is there when you say an online session? So what does it look like?
Yeah. So what I mean by online session is pre-recorded online sessions where a therapist will record a process of exploring somebody's pain that then many people can choose then to do. So it's like an online program for pain management that then can be shared amongst a number of people.
So it's non-specific, and the patient themselves makes it specific with their particular pain they're trying to deal with.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, carry on. Yes, sir. Interesting.
And, you know, what else should I say about pain? So one of the areas that I obviously work in is cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I do the regular monthly EFT well-being workshop. And, you know, people who've had cancer do have pain as part of the condition, whether it's surgery or whether it's some other kind of more non-specific pain. And pain can create a huge amount of anxiety because quite often pain is associated with anxiety or even fear about, well, what's this pain about? Is this pain mean that there's something going on in my body that I don't understand?
Yeah.
And that fear then creates constriction. It creates tension in the body. And so what EFT does is it really releases the tension that the emotion is creating around a sensation in the body. So we can get pain relief through the tapping because what we're doing is we're releasing the psychological aspect of the pain. But then also we can go and spend some time paying attention to that place of pain. You know, if it was in the lower back, we would take a client to put attention on the lower back and ask the client, well, what's this pain like? Can you describe it? If you had to draw it, what colour would you draw it? What shape would you draw it? And then because with the tapping, this consciousness field opens, people start to have insights. You could ask questions, you know, how does this pain make you feel? What does this pain remind you of? So then the pain becomes a messenger from the body through the tapping. And the pain can then, share some insights, share some information. And there might quite possibly be some kind of stressful, traumatic, distressing experience that the pain then remembers. So then we have a psychological origin for the pain rather than a physical, structural origin for the pain.
Yeah, difficult to pick these things apart in a way, isn't it? The difference between physical and psychological things. But it seems like it's a spectrum. It can be a bit of both, or it can be right at one end of the spectrum or the other as well, with, you know, no psychological content or all psychological.
You know. Yes. And you know, there's always the due diligence about making sure somebody that you're working with goes to their doctor, has the necessary exploratory procedures and scans to make sure that the pain is understood from a physical point of view.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you have an example of somebody, maybe somebody with cancer who's experiencing pain that you were able to make a significant difference?
Let me just think. Yeah, I can remember somebody recently who, yes, has low back pain and secondary cancer, and was really concerned that this low back pain was a secondary, as you would.
And
they were awaiting a scan, so everything was in place to make sure that the pain was being investigated, but we tapped and spent a good amount of time exploring the pain, and the pain, you know, went from a sort of a 7 out of 10 down to a 1 or 2 out of 10, which made that pain really manageable in the run-up to the scan, but also showed the client that the way that she was thinking and feeling about the pain was making the pain a lot worse. So then she would have a tool to go away and help her manage the pain, because I would teach her the tool as part of the session. So in the run-up to the scan, she was able to manage the pain herself.
Interesting. Well, I'm aware of, what I was saying about spirituality and science getting sort of close and really overlapping sometimes. I was just put in mind of a spiritual teacher, actually, who described life as being like a seagull sitting on the sea, and sometimes it's rough and stormy, and sometimes it isn't. But when it's rough and stormy, if you sit there and flap around and go berserk, you actually make it worse, you know, and the best thing is just to ride it out. And it's very like what you just said, really. If you take the psychological component, the panic, out of it, then you're just left with what actually is, and it's probably a lot less than you thought. So one of the things that people with cancer sometimes have to face is ongoing pain, which doesn't have a sort of end date on it. They're not expecting necessarily that it's going to go away. They haven't been led to expect that. And I've met a few people like that in a very unenviable situation. But is that something you've come across and tried to help with? And have you got anything to say about it?
Yes. It's difficult, isn't it, living with pain that isn't responsive to treatment that's kind of commonly offered. And so I would say to anybody who has pain of that nature, you have absolutely nothing to lose through exploring EFT, because EFT has a good evidence base for working with pain. And as I just was talking about, you know, there are many factors that contribute towards the degree of pain that somebody is experiencing. So if you can lessen the psychological factors, the anxiety and the fear and what does this mean and the frustration of not being able to live the way that you might want to be living because of the pain. There's so many different psychological aspects that come with pain.
Yes.
Things could be much more manageable. Things could be easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes complete sense. Yeah.
And there's really nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose. And
safe and...
Exactly. There's no negatives to it. So, yeah, worth a try. Okay. Something else you've mentioned, which is talked about more and more these days, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, it's really only fairly recently they've started to acknowledge how common it is amongst cancer patients. But when you think about it, of course, there's lots of reasons why they would have this, you know, from the existential threat of cancer itself, to dealing with an unloving system in the, you know, the way they're dealt with in the, when they go for oncology. There's all sorts of reasons for people to be seriously distressed. Yeah, I'd like to hear what you say about PTSD as a result of cancer diagnosis and the ways in which you feel you've been able to help people with this.
Yeah. Well, when I'm working with somebody who has a cancer diagnosis, once we have achieved a certain amount of regulation, what I mean by regulation is that the immediate distress has softened and been soothed to a certain extent, one of the next things that I will be exploring is the moment of diagnosis. The moment of diagnosis can hold a huge charge. And the way that we would work with that is we have a, you know, one of the ways that we work is a method called telling the story. And telling the story is a way of titrating the exposure. So, for example, if we would take the, I would take the client back to the experience of before they went into the doctor's office and keep tapping through the experience step by step, taking slow, gentle steps and saying to the client, as soon as you start feeling an emotion rise, let's pause there and we'll tap and clear that. So we would tap through the whole experience of the diagnosis from before to afterwards, step by step, carefully unpicking it from the nervous system. And then what happens once that's been done, there's usually a huge amount more freedom in the day-to-day experience, because that particular traumatic experience holds a huge charge of frozen energy in the body.
Yes, I can believe it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Just tell me, I mean, I can well imagine that PTSD is the sort of thing you cannot realize you've got. Am I right?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, how do you find out? How would somebody sort of realize that they had it?
Well, in the process of EFT, the way that we inquire into the distress, the anxiety, the fear, the anger, the grief, opens up the field and takes us to specific memories, which are the trauma. The trauma memories pop up through the process of dealing with what's presenting. So it's like you unpeel an onion and it happens really quickly. So somebody might come with a lot of anxiety and you start tapping and exploring the anxiety and where it is in the body, and then the memory just pops up. And then you know you've got a specific event, and that's the traumatic event to work on.
I see. So if you're an individual then, what would you look for in yourself? I mean, you know, as I say, I can just imagine somebody thinking, well, this is what it's like having cancer. It's very isolating anyway, having cancer. And so somebody not sharing any of that and just muscling through the whole thing somehow, trying to survive, but not necessarily recognizing that they actually have a kind of treatable condition, if you like, that they could be helped with, and thinking this is just par for the course. Is there anything that's a kind of indicator to someone for them to know that they are suffering from PTSD?
Yes. So having persistent high anxiety levels.
Okay.
To having flashbacks, memories that right. come up, that's a really kind of strong indicator, kind of having memories and flashbacks that are then associated with a surge of emotion. Bad dreams, nightmares, sleeplessness.
Right.
Yeah, kind of a dread of going back to that same situation, going meeting that particular medical practitioner again, or going back into the same physical area, you know, like going back into the oncology place. Yes. So there are looking for the triggers and being curious. I mean, you know, maybe going and journaling, you know, okay, I'm really not feeling, you know, very comfortable. I'm not feeling very safe. I have got a lot of anxiety. I've got a lot of distress. Can I pick it apart? Can I be curious? Can I be my own investigator of what's going on, my own observer of what's going on?
Yeah, sounds very good advice. And so you were talking about an assessment tool for PTSD. So presumably those are the kind of things it's asking about.
PTSD assessment tool is something that I come across when I'm working with veterans.
Right.
So one of my areas is working with a veterans charity. And so people, you know, who've come back from combat experiences with ongoing anxiety, ongoing hypervigilance, ongoing kind of mood disorders, then they would naturally be assessed for PTSD using a PTSD questionnaire.
Mm.
But I don't think that so much happens in cancer.
It doesn't. Okay. Well, very interesting. But I think it's an association thing. I say it's beginning to be associated with cancer now. It's been associated with veterans for quite some time. And so at least that's what people are expecting in a way. It's fair enough that people have got PTSD after what they've been through. Yeah. Okay, so we've got a few minutes left. I wanted to broaden out into talking about something I know you're interested in, ritual and ceremony and their place in our well-being. Well, why does this stuff even matter to us?
Because we're part of the web of life, Robin. We're connected to the earth, the air, the fire and the water. There is so much to support us if we think of ourselves as part of the web of life. I always say to my clients, well, we have free will to do it all ourselves. And you're not doing it all yourself because you're now in relationship with me. But what if you were in relationship with the earth? Do you have a sense of something greater than the earth that could also support you? Because when we are interrelated with support that is greater than us, my experience is that can become a healing force that hugely empowers a healing journey, that we're not alone. We're not isolated human beings. We are permeable to the energy field that is the earth, that is also beyond the earth, that is the moon and the stars and the galaxies. If you look through a Hubble telescope, there are many, many, many galaxies if you just look through in one direction. And yet we're interconnected to all of that. So to be curious about how we can enhance our own lives and our own healing by calling on support. And ceremony is a way into that. You know, I always light a candle when I work with a client. When I do anything meaningful, you can see the candle over my shoulder. You know, greeting the day, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the fire that gives us energy, the earth that holds us, greeting the elements every day means that we're interconnected, that we're not alone. It's hugely supportive when we're anxious or when we're full of grief to not have to experience difficult times in our lives on our own.
Well, it's interesting, you know, the radical remission research, research to the 10 factors that people quoted as being the most important to them in having a radical remission, surviving when they should have died. That's one of them, of course, is a relationship to something greater than themselves. And it is interesting that that's, you know, so important to all those people. And as you say, it could have a direct connection with our well-being. It's very non-specific, I think, you know, because the variety of people's ideas of what that connection is massive, of course, huge. But it did all boil down to one thing, which is having a relationship to something greater of some sort and in some way. And you've just described your particular way of describing it, which... I find it really interesting. And you know what I was talking about earlier about this crossover of the science and spirituality here? Well, you know, that clearly seems to have biological consequences, you know, to do with our health. That does. Part of the blue zones is one of the things, the factors in the blue zones that make them live to over 100, seems to. So it's been doubly underlined there as an important ingredient in life and well-being. But you were talking earlier on about the left brain and the way that the left brain deals with the three dimensions and the time and the, you know, all the practical stuff. But of course our right brain is connected to everything. If we the right brain is the place where we experience things like love and intuition and connectedness. And yes, it's interesting that our experience of the world and life is of something very great through that part of us. And so, in a way, you're talking about acknowledging and cultivating that part of ourselves and applying it within the three-dimensional world that we live in. In fact, giving it a place where if we were just totally content with residing in our left brains, there would be no space for it. What do you think about that? Does that land at all?
Yes, and that's you know, our left brains are very useful for surviving this 3D world.
Yes.
But they're very limited.
Yeah.
They're very limited. And To live in relationship with that which is greater than us can bring so much more, not only support,
but a sense of kind of joy and a sense of awe and a sense of beauty and a sense of being some part of something that is infinite.
Infinite, exactly. The left brain gets completely boggled at the idea that infinity is even a thing. But, we know that when we look up into the sky, there's actually no outside container around that. It just goes on forever. And that's something you can't really get your head around, basically, which means your left brain can't really cope with that kind of thing. But your right brain can. It's very comfortable with the whole thing. It's like, yep, okay, everything's perfect, unlimited. And these are both aspects of ourselves. And I feel that they're equally important in our lives, in the way we live. If you disrespect one or the other, it's not going to be so great. Particularly if you do it radically, you are completely left or completely right. You're just chopping off a huge part of who we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. What is it to be fully human?
Yeah.
What is it to be fully human?
Yeah.
Yeah. To live connected to the earth, to connected to our hearts and part of the web of life. And it's a very rich way to live. And ceremony, just taking little moments in our days or in our weeks to connect with that web of life is how we build the relationship. And then it's reciprocal. The web of life starts communicating, starts supporting us.
Mm.
We actually start experiencing that we're not alone.
Yeah. I'd say it actually is doing that all the time. We start noticing. That's the difference.
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, well, this is, to me, it's very heartening that people are talking about medicine, which is the art of making people well and whole and healthy, is supposed to be. They start talking about in the terms that you are, that these things are an important part of our well-being. And to me, they really are. I'm delighted that, this year we're focusing in on our conferences this year, speaking about the psychological, emotional and spiritual aspects as being underpinning all the practical things one might do. Integrated medicine many years ago when I started was really much more focused on the practicalities of these supplements and this diet and whatever it was and this oxygen therapy. But over time, actually, these less tangible aspects, which were they were given lip service then, but now they're actually being given a lot of attention by a lot of people in this field because it seems like it's so fundamental to really attaining well-being in the broadest, roundest way.
Yeah, and for me, it brings such a profoundly deep and broad experience of working with my clients to include it all.
Right. Understood.
To include the science, the left brain,
yep,
the cognitive stuff, to invite in whatever my client might understand as the web of life in their own words, in their own way, and expand that and support them to be in more in relationship in a ways that kind of can really bring a lot of peace and support at times that are difficult.
Mm. We need this. Yeah, right. That's it. Time up, Cathy. Yeah, it was great chat. I loved it. Thank you very much. Just my kind of territory. Love talking about this stuff. So, yeah, thanks very much indeed for coming on and sharing.
You're very welcome. Good to be with you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you're interested to find out more about EFT and Cathy's work, then you can listen to my previous chat with her on the show by going to the Yes to Life show page. That's at yestolife.org.uk. Scroll down the homepage until you see the link to the Yes to Life show. And when you're there, search for Cathy by name. And if you'd like to find out about the Yes to Life EFT online workshop run by Kathy along with Aga Kahinda, then you can find the details by looking under Our Services and then Wellbeing Sessions. Finally, if the discussion at the end of today's interview resonated with you, the Yes to Life conferences this year are both entitled Reclaiming Our True Nature and centre around the topics we've just been discussing. The online conference has already taken place, but video recordings are available from the Yes to Life online store, which you can access from the menu that's right at the very top of the page on the Yes to Life website. The recordings are available as a full set or individually. Our in-person conference this year is on the 26th of September in central London. As I said, it has the same title, but another lineup of exceptional speakers that include Dr. Nasha Winters, Dr. David Hamilton, Dr. Leo Prunboom, James Maskell, and more. To find out more and to book, go to the conference website, which is conference.yestolife.org.uk. Many thanks for joining me today. Please listen again next week when I'll be back with the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.